to the National Press Club. My name is Sonia Hilgren, and I am the chairwoman of the Board of Governors of the National Press Club and Washington editor of Farm Journal. I'd like to welcome club members and their guests in the audience today, as well as those of you watching on C-SPAN or listening to this program on National Public Radio or the Global Internet Computer Network. Before introducing our head table, I would like to remind our members of upcoming speakers. On Thursday, July 1st, U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno will discuss her agenda for criminal justice reform. On Friday, July 2nd, South African President F.W. de Klerk will present a speech entitled South Africa on the Threshold of Democracy. And on Wednesday, July 7th, the President of the United Mine Workers, Rich Trumka, will speak on organized labor's battle to rebound in the 1990s. Other upcoming luncheon speakers include Postmaster General Marvin Runyon and opera singer Jose Carreras. Audio and videotapes of Press Club luncheons are available through the National Press Club Library or by calling 1-800-952-TAPE. If you have any questions for our speaker, please write them on the cards provided at your table and pass them up to me. I will ask as many as time permits. Carol Browner, the President's EPA chief, brought to the job a reputation as a no-nonsense administrator committed to environmental protection. There are stories about her youthfulness and her peak. The fight to have a tree removed from outside her historic district home, which enraged preservationists. Her run-in with sugar growers over Everglades protection. Her battle as a state official with petroleum dealers on underground storage tank legislation. The tobacco industry suit over EPA's declaration of secondhand cigarette smoke as a carcinogen. But for all the criticisms, there has been much praise for this woman who, only 37, and not quite as colorful as her older colleague on the cabinet, Attorney General Janet Reno, nonetheless is among the handful of women to have made it into the president's inner circle. Browner came to the administration from Florida, where for 2 years she had been this state's chief environmental regulator, a post she took after leaving the staff of then-Senator Al Gore. During her tenure as Secretary of Florida's Department of Environmental Regulation, she earned a reputation for steeliness, showing no reluctance to take strong positions on hotly contested issues, including wetlands protection, underground storage tank legislation, recycled content standards, and waste incineration restrictions. Her positions pitted her against industry in Florida on more than a few occasions. To succeed at her cause, she turned to deal-making and arrived at EPA's doorstep, burdened by suggestions from environmentalists that she may have favored business and by big business that she lacked corporate experience. For all the battling in Florida, Browner nonetheless managed to emerge with both industry and environmentalists grudging respect, winning credit for having negotiated compromises rather than dictated mandates. Besides such specific objectives for EPA as the revamping of the Superfund program, Browner wants to accomplish the even more ambitious revamping of corporate and consumer thinking to reduce the creation of waste in the first place. Just last week, EPA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the Agriculture Department issued a joint promise to reduce pesticide use in U.S. food production. Browner's goal as the nation's lead environmentalist is to, in her own words, leave the world a slightly better place. She worries that our children, including her 5-year-old son Zachary, won't have the same quality of life that her generation had. That's why she separates bottles from cans, turns off lights, and commutes to EPA headquarters by subway. A native of South Florida, Browner grew up in the edge of the Everglades. She received her law degree in 1979 from the University of Florida and worked in state government and for the public interest group, Citizen Action. She joined the staff of then Florida Senator Lawton Childs in 1986 to serve as his chief legislative aide on environmental issues. She joined Gore's Senate staff as legislative director in 1988, but returned to Florida in 1991 when Childs became governor. Browner is EPA's seventh administrator and the second woman to hold the post since the agency was created in 1970. President Clinton is committed to fighting for the elevation of EPA to cabinet-level status and already has Browner attending cabinet meetings. Ladies and gentlemen, Please welcome to the National Press Club, EPA Administrator Carol Browner.
Well, thank you, Sonia. I think you managed to cover all of the difficult issues we were able to resolve in Florida and move on from. I am extremely glad to be here, honored to have received the invitation from the National Press Club, and to look out and across the head table at so many friends and colleagues. Some of you may have heard me talk recently about being in a cab with my five-year-old son, Zachary. Now, of course, when I said this to him last night, he corrected me and said, "Mom, I'm 5 1/2, almost 5 3/4." But anyway, I was in a cab with Zachary, and the cab driver turned to Zachary and said, "What does your mom do?" And Zachary said, "She saves things." Of course, the cab driver at this point was very interested and said, "Saves things? What kind of things?" And Zachary replied, "Oh, she saves the air, the water, the trees, and of course, bananas." Our children do expect us to save the things that they care about. They do expect us, the grown-ups, to protect their world and keep it safe for them to grow up in. Living up to our children's expectations is never easy. As I go about my job of helping to make environmental policy, I often think about my son. It helps me remember that when we talk about environmental protection, we're talking about child protection, because it's those tough little judges, those most demanding and trusting of constituents, who breathe the air, drink the water, play in the dirt, and eat those bananas. Their little bodies have to live with our decisions. They will inherit the world we pass on. What kind of world will we pass on? Will it be a world where a person can take a deep breath of fresh air and admire the clear blue sky on a beautiful day? Where we can drink a glass of cold water out of the tap and eat fresh, wholesome foods from America's farmlands? Where you can enjoy swimming in the ocean or going for a hike in the Everglades, the way I used to when I was a child growing up in Florida? Doing right by our children means protecting our world and making it better. In the past, we've tended to focus on so-called end-of-the-pipe solutions to environmental problems. In other words, we'd figure out what to do with toxic waste after it had been created. That's not good enough. This administration, the Clinton administration, is firmly committed to an entirely new approach, a new way of thinking. Our commitment is to prevent pollution from occurring in the very first instance. And that means taking our environment into account in every single thing that we do. I've been very pleased to see that President Clinton and all the members of the cabinet recognize that whether we're talking about trade, labor, the economy, we have got to take into account the impact on our environment and promote pollution prevention. To talk about environmental policy, I regularly meet with Bruce Babbitt at Interior, Hazel O'Leary at the Energy Department, Mike Espy at Agriculture, Frederica Pena at the Department of Transportation, and of course, Vice President Gore, and my colleague from South Miami, your guest tomorrow, Janet Reno. I couldn't wish for a brighter, more committed group of partners. In discussing the administration's new approach to environmental policy, today I want to begin by talking about food safety, because I believe that our approach to this particular issue is illustrative of how we are approaching the whole range of environmental issues. I think, as most of you know, the Clinton administration has just announced a dramatic shift in the government's approach to the use of pesticides on food. For the first time ever, the federal government is committed to a real reduction in pesticide use. I am firmly committed to this, and so is Mike Espy at the Department of Agriculture, David Kessler with the Food and Drug Administration. In our view, this is the very best course for protecting our health and our world. Today, I'd like to say more about how we plan to reduce pesticide use and help American farmers switch to safer alternative methods of agriculture. But I want to take a moment to particularly acknowledge the leadership of Mike Espy. I think he is doing a fabulous job at the Department of Agriculture. He and I have been able to work together. By working together, we have set an example for our colleagues throughout the agencies of the need to work together. And we believe this really heralds a whole new relationship between the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Agriculture. Let me begin by responding to the very important study of children and pesticides that was released on Sunday by the National Academy of Sciences. We in the administration and at EPA will be evaluating this study and other recommendations as we move forward in our work to reduce pesticide use. The Academy's study of children and pesticides was commissioned by Congress 4 years ago and funded by the Environmental Protection Agency. Why? To find out whether there is any evidence that children are more sensitive to pesticide exposure than adults. Because parents are concerned. When you tell your kids, eat your vegetables, you want to be sure that there are no dangerous pesticides on those peas and carrots. When you go to the supermarket and squeeze a peach or read the label on a can of soup, you want to know that you are making safe choices for your children. Or to take an example that occurs in my house, when my son literally eats 4 bananas in one sitting, I want to know that that's okay. I believe firmly that it is the job of government to ensure that food is safe. There should be no question in your mind that what ends up on your dinner table is absolutely safe to eat. And I don't care if you eat rice and beans with salsa, steak and potatoes, or tofu surprise, it has got to be safe. The National Academy of Sciences did not conclude that the food you buy at the supermarket is unsafe for your children. But that doesn't mean that we can sit back and do nothing. As someone who's charged with protecting the public health, and as a mother, I believe the burden of uncertainty must not rest on our children. We must act today. I am very pleased that the White House will shortly announce the nomination of Dr. Lynn Goldman of California to become the first pediatrician to head the Pesticide and Toxics Program at the Environmental Protection Agency, further underscoring our commitment to children and to these very critical issues. Up to this point in time, reforming the federal government's approach to food safety has been stalled. Why? Well, first, because we lacked information. Second, because the issue, the discussion, has become so polarized that it's been virtually impossible to make any headway. Now, after the report, we're in a different position. The National Academy's report, their study, will help us fill the information gap. We'll be able to bring to bear the most up-to-date information from every source, from farmers, the chemical manufacturers, consumers, and scientists. At the same time, for the first time ever, we at EPA will be working with the Food and Drug Administration and the Department of Agriculture. That's new. And it's extremely important. All three agencies working together with the growers, the manufacturers, the food producers, the environmental groups, consumer groups, and members of Congress. The goal? To promote alternative agricultural methods that will reduce pesticide use and ensure the very best protection for our children and all Americans. The National Academy of Sciences study makes 3 recommendations that we strongly agree with. In a nutshell, the report says we don't know enough, We need to find out more. First, we don't know enough about the dangers of pesticides we use, and we need to find out more. Second, we don't know enough about the residues that remain on food we eat, and we need to find out more. And third, we don't know what children's exposure is because we don't know what children eat, and we need to find out. I want to announce today that we will take immediate steps to put into place these recommendations, immediate action. First, we will do more to analyze the possible risks of pesticides. Already at EPA, we screen for 15 different health risks. We screen for the effects of pesticide exposure on the fetus in the womb. We look at reproductive risks, how pesticides may affect fertility, miscarriages, and so on. We look at chronic effects, such as liver and kidney damage, and we screen for a variety of acute effects, such as respiratory problems and eye irritation. But the study says we also need to look at three other possible problems. We need to look at nervous system effects, such as motor impairments, tremors, and paralysis. We need to look at immune system toxicity, any suppression of the immune system that would make people more susceptible to illness. And we need to look at the effect on the body's hormones. We already use a neurotoxicity test on some pesticides. We'll expand this. And we've begun to develop a test for immunotoxicity and for hormonal problems. So as of today, we are on our way to finding out more about pesticide risks as the Academy recommended. That's number one. Number two, we will examine the residues found on the foods that our children eat. We will work closely with the pesticide data program at the Department of Agriculture. Now, they're already collecting residue data for apples, grapes, peaches, bananas, oranges, and potatoes, which are among the crops that infants and children eat in large quantities. But we need to do more. In different regions of the country, you'll find different pesticide residues on the same fruits and vegetables because of differences in climate, different patterns of pesticide application. We need to go out and take samples from fields, orchards, and citrus groves across the country in the various different parts of this country. Number three, we need to find out what children eat. We will improve the food consumption survey in cooperation with the Food and Drug Administration and the Department of Agriculture. And I want to make sure that we pay attention to subpopulations. Examine diet by age, by region, by income level, and ethnic group. Obviously, my 5-year-old eats a diet very different from mine. I can assure you I do not eat 4 bananas in one sitting. Different groups eat different amounts of beans, meat, dairy products. Democratic and Republican presidents eat different amounts of broccoli, and so on. Number four, individuals can be exposed to pesticides in their food, their drinking water, their home, their lawn, and elsewhere. Currently, what we do is we evaluate each of these exposures separately. We need to consider an individual's exposure from all sources when determining the acceptability of a pesticide risk. Number five, in past years, if a child or farm worker showed up in a hospital emergency room with a case of pesticide poisoning, that information was collected by the federal government. That program, that system of collection, was discontinued during the Reagan administration. But I think that we may well need to start collecting this information once again. And I will make it my business to explore the idea of an incident monitoring system and see how we could get it back in place. We recognize the very serious problems facing farm workers and their families, and we are committed to addressing these problems. Obviously, farm workers and their families will be one of the prime beneficiaries of a reduced use of pesticides. All of these steps, all five of them, we can and we will put in motion today. We'll look at what people eat, what residues remains on their food, and what the risks are, if any. But while we're collecting the data, there's more we can do, and so We will do more. We'll speed up getting the safer pesticides on the market, getting rid of others that may be less safe. At the same time, we'll work with American farmers to promote alternative farming methods that don't use any pesticides at all. Obviously, we've already made some progress in doing away with the most dangerous pesticides. Since EPA came into existence and began its work in 1972, dozens of pesticides have been pulled off the market. DDT is probably the most notorious. The so-called A-list, the list of pesticides that are known to cause cancer in people. As of 2 months ago, they are no longer used in the United States. As for pesticides that do remain on the market, we are exploring legislative options. The Clinton administration is developing a package of legislative and administrative initiatives that will ensure the use of best available science in reducing exposure to risky pesticides while maintaining a safe and affordable food supply. Our food safety laws have to be based on an accurate understanding of what we eat and how we live our lives. We have a 1950s law that must make sense for us in the 1990s. In the meantime, we need to reform our regulations to encourage manufacturers to develop safer pesticide. Let's get these safer products on the market as soon as possible so we can phase out some of the older, potentially riskier varieties. There's a fundamental issue here. Over the past 30 years, pesticide use has increased by leaps and bounds, 250% since 1964. I think common sense tells us that rather than using nearly 3 billion pounds of pesticides on our food and then trying to wash it off or commission scientific studies about them and worry about how risky they might be, that we ought to be figuring out how to use fewer pesticides in the first place. That is clearly the best choice for protecting our natural resources and ourselves. And guess what? In many cases, using fewer pesticides can actually be cheaper for the farmer. Let me give you a simple example. The rootworm is a nasty little bug that eats corn. So a number of farmers have figured out that if you plant soybeans in their cornfields every other year, the rootworm goes away. Without the corn rootworm dies. So then the next year they can plant their corn again and have a successful harvest. Crop rotation is a simple, inexpensive method of pest control. We don't use it enough. We should do better. We need to use the power of government to support American farmers in pursuing the latest state-of-the-art, safe, efficient, and cost-effective ways of growing food so as to protect our health, our land, and our water. Pesticide runoff into our drinking water supply is a problem every bit as serious as the residues on our food. We need to protect our groundwater too, because once contaminated, it is difficult and very expensive to clean up. Again, with pesticides, as with the whole range of environmental issues, the Clinton administration is committed to pollution prevention. Because the last 20 years have taught us, I think, a very, very important issue. The best way to clean up the environment is to prevent environmental deterioration in the first place. A couple of weeks ago, I went to my son's kindergarten class to talk about the environment. And what I found truly surprised me. It's a class of 5, 6-year-olds. The entire class of 22 kids knew about recycling, and every single one of those kids could name an endangered species. That is not because they all happen to come from some narrow demographic sector where their parents were busy reading National Wildlife Magazine to them every evening, and I think you should do that. These kids are from a wide variety of backgrounds, and yet every single one of them, in some fundamental way, gets it about the environment. All over America, children are counting on us. Let's make pollution prevention our goal. Whether we're dealing with the food on our table, the air we breathe, or the water we drink, Let's work in a spirit of cooperation. We all breathe the same air. We all drink the same water. And we don't need to choose between a good quality of life and a safe environment. They are two sides of the same coin. Let's remember that what we do to our soil affects our water and our air as well. What we put into our water ends up in our soil. The quality of our air affects what we can grow on our land. The elements of our natural world are as interconnected as the parts of the human body. We cannot treat them as if they are separate. We must be stewards of our world as a whole. A remarkable variety of and diversity of communities make up this great nation. In every one of those communities, let's protect the health of our children and Americans of all ages. Above all, let's act with pride, commitment, and determination. Let's join together to protect our children and our children's children. I can't say it any better than my son did. Let's do all we can do to save the trees, the air, the water, and of course, the bananas. Thank you.